For October the 23rd, 2020, we talk about the Jackbox Party Pack 7, Phasmophobia, and we ask you which game glitches should be forever preserved. Welcome to Level 347. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendez.
Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one, welcome all. Welcome back, Ben.
Me? I was here last week, right?
Well, yeah, I was just testing you. You passed. Welcome back, welcome back, Dennis.
We remember our names, Ben. Good. Yeah. Our practice is paying off.
I'm still not convinced that you are two separate people. So
has anyone seen us in the same room?
Trying to get you guys caught up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tripped up on each other. Sorry, I've got
I see how soon you forget me when your face is getting not on.
Yeah. No, I've got it. So I'm just gonna warn you guys, if you're gonna hear me say ow at some point, because that will be me getting this kitten off my shoulder. She has figured out how to climb my leg, get up on my lap, get up on the desk, and she really enjoys being on my shoulder. And when she's on my shoulder, she sometimes likes to gnaw on my beard. And
guys, she's playing Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, God. I'm lucky that I took an ibuprofen before this.
It's just at the beginning.
It's already begun.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You guys keep me away for so many weeks. I got all that humor stored up.
Wait, aren't you dad? You have kids to inflict that on.
Yeah, but they like it. They don't groan, and there's something sadistic about at the heart of all dad humor. That's my position. And I'm sticking to it,
hence why I said inflict. What's up, Dennis?
What's happening? I don't know, man. It's just been interesting times. Mm-hmm. So we are what, a month and a half out from baby?
Oh, so geez.
Starting to feel real. Jen's got the
probably for Jen more so.
No, I will shy away from any kind of actual complaining, knowing that she has just a whole different level of experience on the pregnancy side.
She's doing the literal lifting. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But she's also doing the nesting, which is fun. Yeah.
Getting all the stuff ready.
Yeah. What that translates to is ordering me to get all the stuff ready, since she doesn't feel well enough to do it. So project.
Well, it's
central. All the fun stuff.
That sounds like what a dad does.
Oh yeah, yeah. But it's got and anyone who's been through it, I'm sure, has experienced the same. It's like the Uber project mode, combined with the scatterbrainedness of like not really thinking through what you want or whatever. So there have been some interesting projects where we have a dresser that I completely took apart, repainted, and added handles to. And then we might be doing something else to it. So
that's like square one. A million little projects with all their dependencies and a deadline that you think you know, but man plans, mm-hmm. God laughs.
Oh no, I'll say this and then I'll stick my foot in my mouth, I'm sure. Yeah, but yeah. That is the one advantage of a planned C-section.
Gotcha.
We've got the date locked in. So I think it's going to be December 6th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any special consideration into picking a birthday?
For this, it was like as early as possible.
Yeah.
It's like we just want baby Barrett. We're calling him Barrett. Baby Barrett on the outside. That would be nice.
Keep on talking, you guys. I need to get this cat off my shoulder because she is biting me.
That's not a euphemism.
You could push it up to the third and it would share birthdays with grandma.
Oh, yeah, we'll see if we can swing that. Well, just given our history with pregnancies, like all the doctors were like, you name your date. We normally will like try to go kind of to full term, but with you guys, like the medical record, you can justifiably ask for as early as you want and we'll probably say yes. So like, yeah, let's get this baby show on the road. But yeah, no, so it is nesting time, project time, and then just prepping for that.
Does the amount of consideration like go down child over child, where it's like at this point you're just like, yeah, we'll just throw up some boxes and we'll reuse these things. It'll be fine.
What's funny is I think there is that, but counteracting that is the guilt that that is possibly happening, which means you go make a bunch of special purchases.
Oh, yeah.
So there's we have a sign on the nursery door now that's "Don't wake the bear."
Hmm.
So all the fun little plays off of Barrett.
Fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah. Did I tell you guys about picking that name?
You may have told us off air. Yes, you did tell us off air. But
oh yeah. So we had kind of been circling around Barrett and like, we think, but maybe not, but maybe. And then finally I was like, you know what? I think I've made up my mind. I think I like it. And mm-hmm. It's like, great. And all of a sudden she got out all these clothes with like bear themes and cutesy stuff. I'm like, okay. He got there a little before I did.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't hear that. I remember another anecdote about it, but
oh sure.
Yeah.
That might have been it coincidentally is the name of the road I grew up on.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one that so I
how do you think the alliances are gonna be with the children? Do you think like it's gonna be Milo and Luke versus Barrett, or
oh gosh, that is
Milo gonna swing?
Because I think the gap, especially with little baby, it's definitely going to be Luke and Milo versus the world, right?
Okay,
right.
With a 4 year plus gap between them, I feel like that gets into like, I don't know, that almost gets into adulthood before you start feeling evened out of those gaps. Yeah. So, I think Barrett will be working mommy and daddy for all they're worth, and then Luke and Milo will be figuring out how to counter that.
Are the let's say established dependents, are they excited about this? Are they nervous about losing status?
No, they're pure excitement. Like gotcha. they're wildly excited. They think it's the coolest thing ever. But what the one thing they've latched onto is we like kind of tried to explain to them what a C-section was.
Okay.
And probably made it sound way more horrific. Like, I don't know a way to like describe, like they're going to slice open mommy and pull mm-hmm. the body out.
Yeah.
It's like, so they've latched onto that. And anytime anyone's like, oh, are you excited for your little brother? Yeah. Yeah. They're going to cut open mommy. Oh my God.
So you know how, when you get a Christmas card from grandma and grandpa and we open the envelope, with a knife, and then we pull out the check. The baby is the check, and the envelope is mommy.
Screw the card.
Okay. Yeah, you gotta check if there's money in there.
Well, the card's the placenta.
There we go. You know that line where the analogy goes too far? I think we found
it. Oh man.
But yeah, I guess the other thing. So yeah, a lot of baby on the brain. The other thing is Luke had the idea for not a lemonade stand, a kombucha stand the other day.
Nice. Nice.
That's what level of bougie we are. Well, so Jen like home brews, and this is the way Luke leads into it. He's the little con man. He goes, "Mommy, I love your kombucha so much. I just want to share it with the world for $1 a cup."
Ooh, yeah.
Marketing boy. Okay, he's already learning so much.
What price happiness?
Yeah, it's pretty great. Yeah.
So they made I think they made $7 in like an hour.
Hmm.
On a rainy day at that. So they were over the moon. They couldn't wait to spend it. We went to Target. I think they got like some Matchbox cars and some Play-Doh or something like that. So that was our adventure this week.
Nice.
Venture mm-hmm. capitalism.
Yeah, starts young
under with mommy and daddy's materials.
Yeah.
you know if they're a minor, that white collar fraud comes off their record.
Oh, it does. Yeah. No, tell them to get it in early. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh. Well, since I faked out and said, how about you, Ben? What's going on, Ben?
Hey, dude, I don't like, nothing happens anymore. No. I feel like that every week. Well. I'm making new Thanksgiving plans this year because I won't be able to do the same ones. Usually I go to Vegas every year and hang out with my old coworkers there, mm-hmm. but that is nixed this year, rightfully so, mm-hmm. with coronavirus and people moving. So I think I'm going to go down to Portland for Thanksgiving this year. So
oh, cool.
I'll be looking forward to that at least. So
cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have no idea what we're going to do. I don't have any, I do not think we should have an indoor dinner with, with the larger family. It just doesn't seem right. I know that's, I feel guilty about that. And I feel guilty because I know I'm going to have to go against the grain. It'll be like me and my brother against everybody else. Like, oh, but come on, we're special. You know, so
there's another one is the excuse of our doctor told us we should not be doing anything 2 weeks before we go into the hospital is an excellent social lubricant for avoiding that.
It's weird when some doctors say something people listen, when other doctors say something people don't. Well, that's cool. Jala, how about you? What's up?
Ben, I wish I had the same problem that you do with not having anything happen, because since the last time I've been on the air, my abuelita passed away. She was 95 and she passed in her sleep. So, you know, the best possible way to go, having lived a full life.
Yeah.
I haven't had any time to process anything because my dad, it was his mother and it was my last grandparent. He's heartbroken, so I'm trying to be there as much as I can for him right now. But I thought that it might be nice to share with some of the listeners just a little bit about like my family and, you know, like what all she did since she lived some 95 years. Okay. So strap yourself in for a minute of Jala chat. So my grandmother was going to be a nun before she met my abuelito and fell in love in Cudillero, which is a coastal town in Asturias, in Spain. They got married and moved to Cuba and started their family there. They came over fleeing Castro's rise to power during Operation Pedro Pan, which was a joint operation by the U.S. government and the Catholic Church. So they came over in two waves. My dad was one of the younger kids. There were eight kids. So, you know, good Catholic family, lots of kids. Anyway, they came over with some of the older kids and they were deposited in a convent in the middle of Nebraska and raised for a time by Dutch nuns who didn't speak English or Spanish.
All right.
I met those nuns at one point and they had learned some English. And like, this was when I was about eight or something. And the only thing I remember other than them being very old was that they told me that my dad was a hellraiser. And that was like the only thing I remember about it. Eventually, the rest of the family came over and was reunited and they settled in Nebraska because that's where they were put. And that's where they stayed. My aunts and uncles took to different trades, lawyer, psychiatrist, neurosurgeon, general practitioner, two, including my dad, were iron workers and so on. But they had a lot of the uncles served in the military. My dad was in the Navy. That's how he met my mom, actually. My uncle on my mom's side was my dad's welding instructor in the Navy and invited him over for dinner because my mom was there. And that's how they met. Anyway, my abuelita held the family together and kept everyone as involved with each other as she could, wherever they are, you know, even when they started spreading out to different states and in some case, different countries. I've got family in all over the place. But anybody with the last name of Prendes is my relative. They are related to me. We are from a specific spot in Spain. There is my family. That is it.
Yeah.
So one of her cousins, Herman, he was still in Cudillero, exchanges messages with me on the regular. And he is the last of the shipwrecked divers, which was historically the trade of my family for generations. Hmm. So the first Prendes was a knight. So yeah, that's a little bit of Jala history. But like, you know, abuelita was kind of the linchpin that held everybody together. And that's why, you know, it's a big deal for my dad, obviously, and for, you know, the family as a whole. But also there's a lot to celebrate there.
Yeah.
So we haven't been here very long at all. I'm first generation American. So.
Well, I'm really sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
I know it was a long road.
It was a long road. She's been sick off and on this entire year. So, you know, we knew it was coming. It was just a matter of when. And she's not in pain. So that's what I've taken. I took some time off this weekend and I didn't do any dancing or any lifting or anything. I played games, though. That was my decompression time. I was playing video games and that was my time out. So I got stuff to talk about. But yeah, I will be posting, because there a lot of listeners have followed me on Instagram for my dancing profile. You guys, I will be posting, I promise. I just had, obviously, I had to have some time. So
hopefully they understand.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if not, they can get booted. I'm saucy and I can do that. I have the power. So, Cole, other than having Kitty torture, how are you doing?
Oh, she's crying outside the door now. Yeah. No, she'll do that. No, things are fine over here. Honestly, the time since last weekend kind of flew because I got sick. Like I had like over the weekend, I had just like with like really bad fatigue and just like body ache kind of stuff, which, ooh, you know, was pretty concerning. I have not been exposed to anybody who I know is positive, but here's how close I was to going and getting a test. I went out to the nearest testing center that does like walk-ins, and I saw how busy it was, and I was like, if I don't have coronavirus, I probably would get it by going in there. And fortunately, I got screened out for not having a temperature. So I feel better now. And I'm not looking for sympathy by saying I got sick. It was just, like I slept all day on Sunday, like literally all day, which is weird.
Well, I mean, this is the time of year when people start getting sick with whatever. So the stress is going to be even higher. Is it Corona or isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, and then also it's like with the general stress of this year overall, I mean, like that makes it worse, you know, like the stress inducing sickness as well is definitely a thing. So,
So fortunately, all of that has worked itself out, and I am just now, you know, dealing with the minor puncture wounds that come from owning a small cat as she gets more, let's say, physically adroit.
As a PSA, they have free testing in Seattle that's like walk up and they don't turn anyone away. So if a plane ticket to Seattle is cheaper than what your hospital provides, it's just on the table for anyone listening.
It would have been covered, like it would have just been a copay under because I had symptoms. It just not fever is what they were looking for. That's just you know, it was a tiny urgent care two towns over, you know, because I live in the middle of nowhere. You know, it's not backwards, it's just there's just not an awful lot of, you know, not an awful lot of civilization.
There's a lot of space.
Yes, there is a lot of space, which is why I like being here, but then you run into something like that. I just feel like talking about video games though. So I think that we should do a regular kind of episode, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the things that we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you've been away the longest, so I will throw to you.
Yeah, I've added one big game to my roster, and I will close on that because I think it'll segue nicely.
Okay.
And otherwise, I've just got some updates on stuff that I've been playing. So Slay the Spire continues to be a central figure. Although I've reached the point in my ascensions, I think I'm like 4 or 5 with pretty much every character, where it's gotten difficult enough that it's slowed me down. Mm-hmm. I still am really intrigued by the game, but since you're not getting that constant dopamine rush of like, oh, I crushed that, or oh, this build is working, you have a lot more like, oh, I made bad choices and now bad things are happening to me because I made bad choices. Like that just makes you more willing to take breaks from the game.
The me sowing, me reaping tweet.
Yeah. Now it's taking more mental energy to play. So the other interesting thing that's happened though is I have the game on Steam on my PC and my Mac, and I just alternate back and forth between those depending on just what's more convenient. And I, for the first forever, always had the cloud save just seamlessly pass between the two, no trouble there. But at some point I had a save that I started on my PC, finished on my Mac, and then went on to do other things.
Uh-oh.
And then came back to my PC and it was still there, and it overwrote everything else I had done.
Uh-oh.
So that was no fun. And I think I got it ironed out, but it was really funny because the run that it was in the middle of was a really good one, and it's one that I won. And I was like, no, can't lose this. Like, that, you know, that was an Ascension level 4 run. I don't want to bail on that. I don't want that erased. And so it was like me trying to remember every single decision I made throughout the run.
Oh God. And hoping that the opponent does similar things.
It's seeded, so I think it's reproducible.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think technically yes, and I don't know if that's down to the card draw level.
It is.
It is. Oh,
it's down to like every action you do, because you can like redo the same battle, and if you do cards like in different orders, then the shuffle can be different.
It's a XCOM style.
Hmm.
With the seeded RNG. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, I was I think halfway through the run at this point. And it was really funny that even though I think I made every single decision the same way, I started seeing things different, or like, okay, this is feeling weird. And by the time I got to the end, I was like, I'm not even sure I took the same path up the third tree. So it's just really interesting how even when you think you remember it very clearly and you feel like you can reproduce it exactly, it's very easy for small things to get off track. So the butterfly effect, I guess, for Slay the Spire. Thankfully I did still win that run. So preserved that piece of it. And that's what matters really. I've been playing more Minecraft Dungeons.
Wait. When are you going to get to level 20?
Probably in 5 or 6 years. That's my guess. when I find the cheat code that sets me at level 20.
I will be very surprised if this is the game that I am not as offended by the difficulty as you are.
That's right. I didn't say I was offended by it. I'm just slowed down by it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, interpret that however you want. So that's Slay the Spire. I've been playing more Minecraft Dungeons. And I think I talked on a previous episode about our golem family that we did for laughs.
Yeah.
Where, you know, everyone just happened to have, or me and Jen both happened to have 3 copies of the golem, which is this big summon. And so we did an entire level with you know, 6 of them stomping around us. Well, one of the daily challenges, and daily challenges are, you know, unique missions, just like they sound, where they have a set of interesting modifiers every time. And it's like, enemies are 50% faster, or, you know, all ranged enemies are spiders, or, you know, stuff like that. Well, one of them was every summon gets 3 copies. So our golem family expanded. The second we saw it, we're like, oh, we know what we're doing. And we were stomping around the level with literally, whatever it is, 18 golems. It blotted out the entire area. You could not see yourself. And it was so much fun. So that was that was a good time. Our golem family is a good Catholic family.
did it mess with the performance of the game at all?
No. And the first time we did it, the game crashed on us, and I kind of attributed that to the golems, although I don't know that was the case. There wasn't any like frame rate stuttering or anything ahead of that, but 18 golems on the screen at once, and it was doing just fine.
Yeah.
Which I think makes sense when you consider the number of mobs that are on the screen at once. Like,
it can handle, you know, more than that anyway. Yeah,
like, the you know, it's Minecraft, so the graphics are PS1 era anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And intentionally so, with, you know, amazing lighting, but, you know, still it is not doing nearly as much work as the machine has to do in other places. So
yeah,
I have to imagine that it's handling that all right. It's a, you know, a bathtub of rubber duckies golem edition.
Nice.
And then, yeah, so that's Minecraft Dungeons. And then the final game I've been playing is Star Wars Squadrons a la PSVR.
Cool.
And Cole, I saw that you talked about this. I saw you tweeting about this, but I have not interacted with it, you on it beyond that. So I'm excited to chat this bad boy up.
Yeah. I'm curious to know what you think.
Have you been playing in VR?
Yes. Yeah.
Excellent. The first time I hopped in the cockpit of an X-Wing, I nearly cried. Like, it was just like, oh my God.
It's a real thing. I talked about that last week, but yeah, it is one of those nerdy fantasies that I am not ashamed to admit that I have.
Oh yeah. And so just in that kind of wish fulfillment, the game is already an amazing success.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, like, beyond the increased visibility in Alliance ships.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, that is really good immersion. But then on the Imperial side, the lack of visibility is as, I won't say it's as fun. It's as world building as anything else. It's as world building and immersive as anything else in the game.
This will be probably the dorkiest thing that I say. So, at least tonight, it really shows you the compromises and trade-offs that the Empire is willing to make regarding the safety and efficacy of pilots who they consider to be expendable.
Cole, I'm going dork for dork with you. Literally, the phrase in my notes is it gives you a whole new empathy for TIE pilots.
Well, I mean, and in the fiction, in any piece of, you know, Star Wars fiction where they talk about what it's like to pilot a TIE, they even say it in this game when you're talking to some of the people. Like a mechanic says, I don't know how you guys do that, going out there with nothing between you and the enemy except for a piece of hull and some glass, because they don't have shields. You know, like, and they just are not, they're not made to really do much of anything besides shoot and be shot.
Yeah. Well, and the restrictiveness of the cockpit, like I couldn't place it the first time I flew a TIE fighter. Cause I was like, I was like, man, this thing is the, you know, the space equivalent of a crotch rocket. Like there's a lot of engine under me right now and it feels great, but something was off and I like, it just felt weird and wrong. And I didn't know what it was until I got into a cockpit that I could actually see in. And I'm like, oh God, for all the VR immersiveness and being able to look around the cockpit, I'm looking around the cockpit and not out of it. And my actual view is so restricted in front of me that it becomes, I won't say it's pointless to be wearing VR goggles, because again, it was like, that was just this really cool, like, I had the same reaction. Like, of course the Empire would do that.
Yeah. Like, well, you can still follow the movement of something better in VR than the, you know, than if you're just looking at the flat screen. For people who are having trouble, you know, picturing this, like if you haven't played like X-Wing or TIE Fighter or any of these, like when you're sitting in an X-Wing, it's kind of like, piloting a convertible or like a sports car that is made for visibility. So like when you look up left and right, everything is glass, you know, so you have like windows everywhere. In a TIE fighter, it's kind of like you're piloting a bathysphere. Where
this is well said.
Yeah, where the visibility glass, the windshield in front of you, is just a circle of glass like on the front of this orb.
Yeah. Well, and it's so funny because I found myself like literally leaning over the controls to get a better peek out the window. And then you realize, wait, oh, even if the window is bigger, I've got these big freaking wings on either side of me, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's even worse than a TIE interceptor. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then you realize, oh, that's why the TIE interceptor has these notches, because that's the dogfighting thing. You have to have better video. And just like this string of dorky realizations about this universe that I've followed since I was 8, you know, is it's just incredible. So I love playing the game for that. And it's an interesting question of like the TIE cockpit is objectively from a UI standpoint worse, but that makes sense in the fiction. And I don't know this for sure, but I imagine that the team had discussions about that in terms of a balancing conversation.
Possibly, I'd be surprised
if they didn't. And so, you know, at what point is adherence to that world is the trueness to the TIE pilot experience prioritized over players feeling like they've got a balanced game, or like people not wanting to play Empire because they don't want to deal with that?
I mean, I prefer the Empire ships because they're faster.
And I was about to say, in general, I think the Empire is meta right now. So such as something like that can exist in a game a couple weeks old.
So you're playing this on PSVR. What are you doing by way of control?
Yeah, I'm fumbling around a lot.
Okay. No, I mean, like, well, like, what are you using?
Yeah. So I'm using the PS4 controller.
Okay.
And I came into the game, my biggest VR flight sim experience before that was Ace Combat, which is similar in that it's very arcadey and zippy. But the way that Ace Combat is set up is subtly different than how, it is in Squadrons, and specifically in Squadrons, yaw has a way bigger impact than it ever has in Ace Combat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just different enough to be infuriating because I was right on that line of like, is it worth me just committing to the default controls and relearning it because I'm close to there anyway, but it's still frustrating. Mm-hmm. Or do I go into the menu and completely blow everything up and try to like make it Ace Combat, knowing that this is a different game and it doesn't really work like that?
The difference being, because you're piloting a starship in this, or a starfighter or whatever nerdy thing it is, I want to beat myself up. the y'all, like your rudder is far more responsive. So like, if you are going, you could like turn right as if you were in a car, and there would be less like pitching that goes on, like less tilting as you go. So like you can do like a U-turn, whereas that maneuver in an airplane, in a flight simulator, even one as arcadey as Ace Combat, like that would involve pitching to the right, like almost doing like a roll, and then pulling the yoke up so that you would be using the tail fins or whatever to make a sharper turn. Yeah.
Which is infinitely cooler and is the way I prefer to fly.
Yes.
And I think like, cause what I wound up having to do is literally go to the practice yard, which is the big scrapped Star Destroyer field. Mm-hmm. And literally just like orienting my, cause it's, you know, enemy's gate is down, right? It's space. There is no up and down. Mm-hmm. And that is hyper disorienting when you're trying to learn controls, in addition to everything being 3 degrees off of what I'm used to.
Yeah.
So I literally like went into this practice area. I found a Star Destroyer and just, I was like, the Star Destroyer is up, you know, reverse that Ender's Game, whatever thing. And literally timed out like, okay, I'm going to go full thruster and just hold down to loop the loop. How long does it take me? 1, 2, 3, and do that for looping up, do that for barrel rolling, do that for, yaw turning and everything. And so I think you do turn faster, pulling up versus the yaw, even though it is more responsive.
Yeah.
And like I said, it just feels cooler to like roll into a turn. Mm-hmm. And you wind up using a combination anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You do whatever and it ends up working. I find myself doing the roll and pitch, just because I'm using a stick. Mm-hmm, and it's just easier to, you know, to do that.
You lucky bastard. I really should get
I'm playing it on PC, so like there's more available by way of that at a lower price. Yeah.
That is one thing that this has made me more interested in a stick than I've ever been in my life. which could be cool. It takes me back to there was a Star Wars fighter pilot game. I think it was like Star Wars Alliance or something. X-Wing like
Alliance.
That.
Yeah.
X-Wing Alliance. Yeah, there you go. And I had this weird joystick that was like, it was a two-handed joystick. So it was like an arc, like think the St. Louis arc, with you would hold both sides and like move them together. And there were buttons on it. It was like, you know, it was a gimmick controller that caught the kid who was just looking for something.
Was it like a U that you held like both legs on, or was it an upside down U?
An upside down U. So the curve was at the top.
Oh, that is super weird. Huh?
Weird piece of equipment. And it was functionally just a joystick, just more controls on the piece that you were holding.
Right. Right.
But it's like, I'm like that probably would feel at home ish, here in a way that I haven't thought about that in forever. but yeah, so, you know, I had to relearn the controls. I literally went to the practice and just started with turning. And then getting more complicated and more complicated, because when you're in the middle of dogfighting, you're always trying to do something, you know, just it's just a little bit beyond what you know how to do, and you wind up just getting disoriented. So it's the first time I can remember in a while just going in and practicing again.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm better for it. And like that, like I lost a night to that, and I kind of had everything down, and then it was just pushing the limits and having fun and zipping around this yard of debris. It's like, can, it was awesome.
I got a question. Can you make yourself throw up?
Like in general or specifically in this game?
Specifically through this game.
I cannot. I've never had that trouble with VR, fortunately. But and I know there's something about being in a cockpit, like having those anchoring kind of struts around you, that's very helpful.
Yeah.
In terms of that. But this, I mean, this pushes the limits of what you're doing, because you're turning on three axes at once. Mm-hmm. And so it gets crazy.
I could get motion sick looking at a picture, looking at a painting in a museum. And my bigger problem is not nausea. It's a headache from eye strain more than anything. Mm-hmm. And that's just because I want to sit down and play for more than, you know, 40 minutes at a time, let's say, which is about usually when I need to tap out on VR.
Yeah. Well, especially in a game like this where I went into the multiplayer for the first time and it's like, you should probably warm up. And I was like, oh, this is how it's going to be, huh? Okay. multiplayer has been great. The one other thought that I'll share is from story mode. Gunny might be my favorite Star Wars character of all time.
Oh yeah.
Like the squad mom, who's also a badass. It's just fantastic.
with the bionic arm.
Yeah. The bionic arm, the like Southern drawl ish.
Yeah.
And she's also like a bright red alien. I don't even know what kind of alien that is, but one of them Star Wars aliens.
Just one of the red ones, you know.
It's one of the red ones.
Yeah. What do you think of the structure where you're kind of bouncing back and forth between two sides of the same conflict?
I like it as a general storytelling conceit. What I don't like is the way they manage the saves. Because I habitually will go through all the dialogue right up to the point of launch when I'm done for the night and then be like, okay, I'll hop in and start the mission.
Yeah.
And it always saves at the beginning of all the dialogue. So that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Otherwise I'm okay with it. I'm probably halfway through it right now. Like I just had the big climax victory on the Empire side, if that orients you at all.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm pretty close. All that I have left to do is is like the final hurrah on the New Republic as it goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good. Like the story grounds you in what the game is about.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. There are a few things that feel as cool as flying into a big thing, blowing it up from the inside, and then escaping as it blows up behind and around you. And then you just barely fly through the door that closes.
That's first person Taco Bell.
What? Oh, geez. That's yucky. I don't like that one bit.
On the other side of that coin, sorry, is there are a few things less cool than the game trying to shepherd you through that big set piece moment and you screwing it up because you didn't understand exactly what was going on and then having to restart.
Like yeah.
That kind of like, oh, that was on me. Hold on. And then you do it a second time and realize just how hard the guardrails were on to not have you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oops. Breaks the illusion I just a little bit.
That up. Yeah. Go ahead though. You were saying something else.
No, that was really about it. I'm excited to jump in and try some multiplayer. I've mostly been relegating myself to doing missions and like trying them again with different ships when they give you that ability. And also like in the back half of that campaign they let you do that, and also like you can try for different medals. Like it's a real cool game.
Yeah. And Ben, to the earlier difficulty statement, like I'm on the default difficulty and finding a huge amount of challenge.
Yeah.
Like there's it definitely is not pulling any punches.
Yep. Especially you've got like the default loadout, but you can customize it and yeah.
Well, I know there's at least last night I played with another duck. So we got two. We're closing in on the squadron if you ever do decide to join multiplayer.
Yeah.
And consider this the call. Ping me in Slack. and we'll see each other in the battlefield, in the starfield, in the debris field.
Up in the sky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Did you have anything else besides Star Wars Squadrons?
No, that's my big new one. So I'll pass the torch here.
By the way, I just want to say a group of ducks is called a paddling. So you want to get a paddling on Star Wars.
That usually happens anyway.
Group of ducks. That's paddling. yeah. Let's see. So I had Star Wars Squadrons. That is fun. That is good. Last Thursday, I streamed the new Jackbox Party Pack.
Yeah.
Jackbox.
I was not aware this was a thing.
Yeah, it literally just came out on the 15th. And I fired that up and had a pretty good time with it. Let me see here. And yeah, it's pretty good. However, it's kind of, they make some strange decisions with it in terms of in terms of like having games that feel like they are designed to be played either in person at, you know, ideally, or like maybe occasionally you would be able to play it with people over Discord.
Yeah.
So The main game in this is Quiplash 3. If you know Quiplash, you have played, if you play one Quiplash, you've played them all. You're trying to come up with the funnier response or the funnier fill in for a blank in a particular statement. The way that they altered this is at the end, instead of the last lash, which is what they had before, they have the trip lash or the thrip lash or something like that. It's a nonsense word, but it's amazing because instead you have to come up with three answers on your own and you're put up against somebody else's three answers for the same one. And you know, if you know anything about basic comedy writing, three is the perfect number for anything funny. so
what,
like,
about all six?
No, six doesn't work. But if you said
five is right out,
five is right. Yeah, just it's the rule of threes. But yeah, like there are all kinds of just repetitions and structures that you can do for the way you put those together. That feels very technical and, like, you know, up its own butt in terms of you know, comedy writing structure or whatever. But yeah, it's really good and fun.
You could do like mono safety quip on that and you might be the winner at the end of it. They've really improved the safety quips.
Oh yes. No, we had one where two people did the safety quip at the same time and they both worked.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So, let's see here. I don't want to talk about each and every one of these because, like, the devil's in the details. Like, that one is specifically meant for, like, a group of people who know each other and are playing together. Champed Up is the new drawing game where one person is told, like, draw a superhero or a monster who is, like, the ultimate at X, Y, or Z. And you draw your little cartoon character, and then somebody else sees just the drawing and doesn't see the prompt. And they have to draw their own, you know, kind of like counterpart to that. And then it does all these kind of like different matchups. And that is fun. That has been a good time. Nice. We had some good funny drawings that came out of that there. It's a little bit like more difficult than doing like a t-shirt design because you have to like design a character. And that's like a real ass skill that people have.
Yeah.
The other one that I was surprised at how fun it was is a game called Blather Round.
Okay.
Where
is the trivia?
No, so this isn't trivia. What this is, have you guys ever played Taboo or Password?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So one person is given like a name or the name of a story or something like that. So for me, like, I got Ellen Ripley from Aliens. Okay. And you can't, the only way that you as the person who is playing the game can communicate is to assemble sentences out of like just predetermined words that they give you. So like you can say, she is the best at Brave. And you would say that she is the best at Brave. Every person can guess as many times as they want by writing out what it is. And each of those answers can become a component later on. So, you know, somebody answered Jill Valentine and you get the option for one here for one of your sentences. You can say she is like Jill Valentine. And it's it's a very stilted way of communicating, or it's in the same genre as Jill Valentine. And you go around and each person gets a turn trying to convey what their prompt is without actually being able to say it. It's actually really fun. And I was bummed out because the system glitched before we had any opportunity to finish it up. That's probably my bad for playing it on launch night, but yeah.
You were excited, and apparently rightly so.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this. Did somebody have the answer then for what it was?
Did somebody... go ahead.
Yeah, because it cut out before it shared what the answer was, right? And it was some sort of movie.
Yeah, nobody said what it was, and I forget what the clues and stuff were.
I think it was a book, and it was like a character inspired by like family tradition.
Something, yeah. Right. and then the person didn't share because I think they were mean. yeah. So that was good. I didn't expect it to be as fun as it was, because it's, you know, down at the bottom, like it seemed like an also ran, but there's probably going to be real legs on that one.
It'd be really interesting to be able to know like what the team thinks is going to be big at the beginning of a relaunch versus what actually winds up being big.
I'm curious. I would like to look up. I should look up and see if there are postmortems that they have done. They seem like a really open studio in that regard. Yeah. And the fact that they're coming up with the new games every single year kind of makes it seem like they would have a culture of, you know, at least talking with themselves about what their expectations were and what lived up. Mm-hmm. One that we didn't do that I am bummed that we didn't do and would be kind of impossible to do if you didn't have everybody on voice chat is called talking points. Basically what happens is a person has to get up and give like a little like TED style talk with somebody else choosing the slides that they're given. Choosing the slides and doing the transitions, and like you are like rated based on how well the presenter rolls with the punches and goes for it. That sounds amazingly fun to me. I, you know, it's probably not going to be very technical with like its scoring, but it just seems like it would be, you know, it piques my interest as somebody who did like Odyssey of the Mind or whatever. So yeah, Jackbox Party Pack 7.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll continue playing that on the nights of the the Duck Box Party Quack nights that we do. Yeah.
Very cool.
And then other than that, finished up Gabriel Knight. It's a 30-year-old game. People should play it. It's good. Yeah. Let's see. Jala, how about you?
Okay, so the first thing I'll mention that I played is Stories Untold. This is a 3-hour indie game by Devolver Digital that was released in 2017. I played the first episode only out of 4. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I'd heard a lot of hype about this game back when everybody else was playing it, and I gave it a spin, and I have to say that episode 1 didn't work for me. It felt like they were setting me up for a lot more than what I actually got in their story, and my brain came up with far more interesting things than what actually occurred. I know that subsequent episodes are supposed to be of different styles and genres, but if the first episode didn't do it for me, I don't know if it's really worth me proceeding to the others. Julia mentioned to me that it gets kind of more fiddly, like Futz with the Machines and stuff, that just kind of takes away, at least in her experiences. So that's a thing. I mean, I know that there are people like Eric or Z Chocobo who said that the first episode really worked for him, and it was the scariest thing for him that year that it came out, including Resident Evil 7. Like, the first episode scared him more than anything else, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. I sat there and I'm like, boy, it's emo. Boy, okay, like, that's disappointing. That's all? Okay. Yeah, and I'm salty about this. There was a bug. There was a bug. And it made it to where I had to stop the game and restart it from the beginning. So I had to do the first half of the episode twice.
Yeah,
so
that's a bummer. That'll turn you against anything. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, I got past that part, but like, it was starting to like, you know, work up to something, but like, it also kind of, okay, there is a note and it changes in this, you know, first episode, and it just kind of offered more direction than I really wanted it to give. And it took away from the, you know, kind of unknown scary that was supposed to be going on. Mm-hmm. And then also, again, like the ending, I was just like, okay. And then there were things in it that you come across during the gameplay that seem like there's going to be more to them. And then there's nothing ever develops out of that. It's just, you know, like, oh, there's this thing that seems like you're supposed to be going there, but then you don't.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to clarify for folks, the first episode has you playing a text adventure, and you see the you see the computer that you're playing it on, and you know, and you're typing it on the screen, and you can kind of see the environment around the computer as it goes. And the strong implication that this is like a haunted text adventure, and as things happen in the game, it starts affecting the world around your character, you know, your viewpoint character in the game who is playing it.
I wasn't even going to give them that much because I didn't want to spoil anything in case somebody wanted to go back to that game. But okay, that's cool. doesn't give away like the essential elements, so it's fine.
Right. But no, yeah. The entirety of Stories Untold is like all of it is basically spooky situations around different interfaces. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're like interacting with different machines, and the results of that are kind of like causing things that should not necessarily result from what you are doing. Mm-hmm. And the opening, which I think is it is its strongest foot, is the one that I think that, you know, because it is a game within a game kind of thing, is mm-hmm. going to get the message across more clearly than the other stuff is.
Okay, well, so it sounds to me that given how I've responded to the first episode, that maybe it's not it. I would probably end up being bitter if I went through the rest of it. So I will pass on that. Mm-hmm. I can see where it would work for somebody else, but just like for me and where, you know, like my, how it hit me, it didn't work out in my particular case. So don't let that be like a discouragement from trying it out for yourself if you are interested in the premise that Cole has outlined there, but just understand that if you have heard a lot of hype, I'm anti-hype person. I will tell you the opposite. Like it didn't work in my case. So like there's a balance.
If somebody tells you it's the scariest thing that I saw, like I understand. Eric was somebody who watched that stream mm-hmm. when I streamed it, God, several years ago now. Mm-hmm. And you know, had said some similar stuff. I happened to jive with it, but expectations are real. You know, even outside of this, it can affect.
I trust the opinions of, you know, certain individuals, and, you know,
Eric knows horror games. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this might be. And he had said also, like, it might not work for you, but it happened to work for me. And so, I knew that as mm-hmm. much, you know, like yeah. I wasn't going into it with a lot higher expectations. It's just that what my brain came up with when I started seeing what was going on mm-hmm. was a lot more exciting than what actually occurred in the game. And that's where it went like, oh man, they could have done. And I will type to you, Cole, later and tell you what I was thinking so you can, you know, relish that. But boy, I had some really good ideas, and that's not what happened. And it's not like it has to follow, obviously, what I'm thinking, but it just kind of fell flat for me in a way.
Yeah.
So
if you're not going to finish it, the Wikipedia synopsis is pretty well complete.
Okay.
Like it's pretty thorough. Just like read it if you like reading about like cool stories and the ways that they're told.
Like, you know, I have no problem, you know, edifying myself about that. You know, particular thing, but I just don't think that I want to go through it myself. And I had stopped. I had intentionally not watched the stream because I knew I was going to play it eventually, and mm-hmm. I had intended to, and that's why I held off from watching it at that time. Mm-hmm. But I think probably I would have been fine just watching it now mm-hmm. that I've, you know, played a little bit myself. But anyway, so listeners, if you don't want to play it yourself, you can go watch Cole's archive stream.
Yep.
But so any questions about Stories Untold? I mean, I think I pretty much said all I'm going to say about that. Okay, moving on. I've got two things that are super exciting, but they go together. So also over the weekend, I played the second and third games in the Lovecraftian murder mystery FMV series begun by the infectious madness of Dr. Decker, which if people are listening now who happen to be around back when I first played that game a couple of years ago and I made Cole play it and stream it, it's a great game. Really love that game. So it took me a while to actually get to playing the sequels, you know, but it's apparently a trilogy. There are some common threads between all of them, particularly the first and the third game. So the first one that I played was The Shape-Shifting Detective, which is okay. the second installment. Now, in this game, you arrive in a town called August. You're a shape-shifting detective, big surprise, who was sent in to work with the local police, but you're actually kind of, you're not a human because you're shape-shifting. I mean, mm-hmm. like, you're not human. But some other organization, which is not mentioned, has sent you in there to do this investigation of a murder of a young cellist named Dorota Shaw. And the prime suspects are three traveling tarot readers who predicted the murder, but there are a whole bunch of shady people in the town that you have to deal with as well that are, you know, surrounding the case that, you know, much like in Dr. Decker, where everybody's a little bit off, like this is another one of those situations where everybody just has their own level of creep, you mm-hmm. know? So, and just like in Decker, your choices throughout the game impacts who the killer is. And there's multiple endings for this. I think there's 8, if I'm not mistaken. So the cool thing about this is that you are able to shapeshift into anybody you have met, although you are advised by the shady organization that sent you not to pretend to be a child for some unknown reason. And there is one child in the game. So the end.
Now, wait, are there any mechanical restrictions or it's just advice?
I don't know. I was never given the option to become the child after I met her. So I'm assuming like you can't, although I don't know, like, why would they tell you that? And then
they realize like, oh, we forgot to program the child. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I don't know.
write it out.
Well, anyway, so, not in the time that I played it, I was not given the option to become the child that I noticed, but like you have a whole lineup of mugshots and I was just going for specific people. So it might've been in there. I don't know. Anyway, you start the game with a briefing by the chief of police and then head to a guest house where you meet the owner and the three tarot card readers who are all staying at this guest house because they're also travelers. No matter where you go, there is a radio playing a program called Dark Nights with Poe and Monroe. And this includes hourly news briefings about the investigation and also different horror stories that play like somebody narrating creepy stories in the background while you're walking around and cool. doing stuff, which is pretty neat. Really gets you into a mood. Mechanically, this is extremely different than Dr. Decker. So in Dr. Decker, you're a psychiatrist whose predecessor was murdered by one of his patients, and your actions involve interviewing each of those patients and answering questions from them from time to time, either to discourage or encourage their particular delusions. And this includes some pre-typed questions as well as capacity to type in questions of your own to ask more details about particular subjects. In this game, you're still interviewing people, but you're options are simplified to picture icons indicating a response or a question, like a check mark or an X for a yes or no, squiggly lines for waves indicating the ocean, or, you know, an outline of a person to ask further detail about somebody that was already mentioned or something.
This is much closer to what was in Contradiction.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have the capacity to go to your room at the guest house to change into somebody else in order to get more information from other people that you might, you know, than you might in your own form. So like you can become one of the tarot card readers or the chief of police or whatever and go talk to people and they will react differently to you in a different form, of course.
Yeah.
So that's the fun part about it. You can kind of warp around to different people. And after you obtain the crucial information for each segment of the game, Radio August pops up and summarizes where the police are in the investigation at the time. So you can choose at that point to either keep investigating if you want to kind of linger in the segment that you were doing or to pursue, you know, going forward with the story, the investigation and everything.
Here's my question.
Uh-huh.
Oh, sorry.
Sure.
Is that one of the decisions that can change who done it?
I'm not sure. But in my playthrough,
very sinister.
Like, okay, I know it would be.
I think I know who it is, and if I keep on going, that might change. So,
yeah, I don't know actually, but basically, time won't advance to the next hour in, you know, that evening of your investigation until you've passed that point. So I think I think mechanically it's just there to allow you, you know, to get the rest of the, you know, characterization, if you want to go back, because in my playthrough, I didn't reveal anything particularly groundbreaking when I went back through. So every time that popped up, I just started at a certain point, just proceeding on to the rest of the story. One thing that is also very neat that I like a lot is that you can visit the chief at any time for a summary of the investigation, and he recaps what information you've found out and also what you're supposed to follow up on and investigate further, which is real handy, especially if you have to stop and get back to it. And as you roam around in the guise of other characters, you end up having these really weighty and important discussions or are privy to like confessions or something that potentially never reach the actual intended audience character because you're masquerading as somebody else. This, of course, gives you more information about the characters, but also leaves things off in a sort of crazy way because now you know something that the person you're borrowing the form of doesn't know. Like there's a point where one character proposes to you. At least in my playthrough, somebody proposed to me masquerading as a different character, and I got to pick out what happened. I am happy to say that I guessed.
Does that ever come back to bite you?
I don't know. It did not noticeably do anything different in my playthrough. No. But I don't know what all the behind the scenes stuff calculates out.
Right.
I'm happy though to say that I guessed the killer correctly. But I also have a lot of unanswered questions about a bunch of different characters because as in Dr. Decker, they flesh out stuff and just make you go, huh? And then there's just like, you want to know more about it. And some of the stuff that was revealed during the investigation, I still have questions about that. So I want to replay it and see if a different approach will give me more information about those threads. So, this only took about 3 hours start to finish to get through one playthrough. And it is something with a high replayability. So definitely, you know, kind of like Decker, but a little bit more streamlined and a little bit quicker than the Decker run through. Because I think that was, what, Cole, about 8 hours or something?
I think that was like a two-weekender for me.
Yeah, something like that. So, any questions about Shapeshifting Detective before I move on to the other installment in the series?
Mm-mm. How heavy is is there a horror element to it, or is it all like mystery?
It's mystery, but it's not Lovecraftian in the way that Decker was, but there's definitely a lot of weird stuff going on, like a supernatural occult stuff going on. There is a killer and there are situations where your life is threatened. So, I mean, like, you know, you're still dealing with an active killer as somebody who, you know, I ended up having a scene where I ended up confronting the killer and had to pick something and I managed to live. Yes. So there are some horror elements to it, but not the Lovecraftian stuff so much to that. Yeah, it's more of a mystery, but it's got some tidbits that, you know, has some definite cross DNA with horror stuff. One that definitely does have some horror to it, though, is Dark Nights with Poe and Monroe, which is the third installment in the series. This one is possibly my favorite one, although it's been a couple of years since I played through Decker all the way. Mm-hmm. So I have it pulled up on my Switch so I can play through it again. In this game, it definitely, like, it went creepy places right away. And there was, like, horror stuff right away. And I was like, oh, this is cool. In this game, you play a bunch of different episodes of weird supernatural incidents which occur to and around the hosts of Radio August, which was the radio station that was on in The Shapeshifting Detective. Also, the two characters, Poe and Monroe, appear in Shapeshifting Detective. So, you know, there is some cross DNA. There's also some connections to Dr. Decker, which you will find out. I don't want to spoil it, but it happened. There's definitely a total Dr. Decker thing going on in one of the episodes specifically. So mechanically, it's different from the other two games as well. And your choices are timed in this one. And at certain junctures, you have to decide what course of action to take by selecting one of several different panels on the screen. So if you select nothing, the couple of times I miss my chance, it kind of just moves on a predetermined path. But the point is, like, you need to pick... you know, this character or this character as the one taking action, or, you know, which one of these, you know, responses do you have to this caller that comes in, or mm-hmm. something like that. This is a more focused and streamlined method of play because there isn't any backtracking. There isn't any trying to figure out what to ask or who to be. Mm-hmm. It's very straightforward, but it also has a better sense of pacing because of this. And it keeps the tension higher because you have a timer going. You got to, like, you got to figure out what you're looking at and, you know, pick one and go, you know? And this game is shot in such a way that it seems scarier than either of the first two games. There's a lot more dramatic sense of place and a strong emphasis on light and dark, as in the earlier titles, but it zooms in and out at just the right moments. And mm-hmm. overall, it just kind of felt, you know, like they were leaning into and kind of like finding a groove at this particular point.
You know? I mean, that was going to be my question. Like, are you seeing, like, mm-hmm. what it sounds like you're describing is like a marked, like, linear progress almost,
yes.
like of them yes. getting more comfortable, like, hey, this is how we make a game using FMV that we mm-hmm. like, using lessons that we learned from, you know, these other ones that people seem to enjoy, but, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But another thing I want to say on that note before I get too much further is that the studio actually began life in 2003 making murder mystery party games for commercial mass market brands. Mm-hmm. And they say that they were the first to incorporate DVD videos into the experience. Hmm. So they've been doing the FMV murder mystery kind of thing for a very long time now, writing wise and production wise, but just in a different format, kind of presenting that for a party game. Mm-hmm. You can actually buy their game Murder at the Manor for 6 to 12 people online. And there's a downloadable version as well. It's a flexible game where the murderer is selected at the party itself. So
yeah.
This is something I definitely want to do once COVID stuff calms down. It sounds really fun.
Yeah.
Especially given like how I feel about their games so far, like the video game versions. So another thing I wanted to mention, though, is that there's also a bunch of instances of humor, and I found myself laughing unexpectedly at, like, all these different ridiculous things that happen. And, like, say in one episode, Poe and Monroe are inside their studio, and somebody is talking to them from the other side of the store, telling them this really jaw-dropping story about what's really going on in the large picture. And it's, like, this incredible story with all of this stuff that, Cole, you would just be like, I am here for this mm-hmm. what this man is telling you. But then he starts getting frustrated because Poe and Monroe don't say anything in response. Okay. Turns out that the door is two-way soundproof and they can't hear each other. So he's just been talking to nobody this whole time. And like, when you find that out, I'm just like, oh my God, that's hilarious. And there were like several moments of just like ridiculous stuff that just really worked in the delivery in the game for me. There wasn't a time that it did something silly that didn't make me laugh. Like I laughed every time.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, there's 6 episodes. They take about half an hour to play. So the entire game can be completed in 3 hours, just like Shapeshifting Detective. So that's 6-hour block to finish out everything.
Cool.
It has an extremely high replay value, though, more so in my eyes than the first two installments, because it's got this episodic quality to it, and it's so streamlined, and you know it's about half an hour for any one of these anytime you pop in there. So
yeah.
You know, like that's a good time slot for my life. So
mm-hmm.
And I find myself wanting to replay this one sooner than the others, probably in part because you can just, again, pick something and go through it. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I want to see more of these characters and I want to see more episodes in this. Like, I want them to make Poe and Monroe Part 2 really badly.
Yeah.
So, this game...
I was going to say, this didn't come out that long ago. It came out in May, so hopefully it's done well for them.
Oh, yeah. So I did reach out to the studio and just like ping them and say, hey, I'm going to be talking about this and I absolutely love it. You know, what do you have to tell me about it? And they said that Poe and Monroe was their first game released on their own to PC and console, but all of their games are 100% self-funded, created, written, and owned by them.
Oh, awesome.
They used a publishing company for the first couple, but this one is all them. Poe and Monroe took 26 days to film, and so far 5 months and counting to port to all the consoles, because boy, is that a hassle. So they started working on this idea when Leah and Clemens, Monroe and Poe, respectively, the actors, were having dinner with the studio owners after the Shape-Shifting Detective live stream. And then they just like got the idea together and just started working on it. They also were recently nominated for Most Inclusive Team in the Game Hers Awards. And both the actress for Mariana/Violet/Veronica from Zombies Run, I thought I heard her voice somewhere else before. Monroe were both nominated for Top Actress. So I want to say congrats to them for that. But nice. Now that I've discovered their YouTube, there looks to be a lot of like fun interviews with the actors and stuff. And I want to go through and dig in there and just like have that on in the background, because I'm into it and I'm here for it.
Yeah.
And Cole, like, I don't know if you want to do Shape-Shifting Detective, because it's not totally horror, but then again, neither is Gabriel Knight. Or if you want to just do Dark Knights with Poe and Monroe, but I definitely think you need to play them one way or the other.
I strongly
suggest that you do Poe and Monroe and stream at the least, even if you don't do Shape-Shifting Detective.
Dark Knights sounds like it'd be a good fit. Gabriel Knight, that was obvious, that was a cheat, but that was also that's because I like that game quite a bit, so it was an excuse. You can only do that once every couple of years.
Yeah. Well, I actually played Poe and Monroe first, and then I went back and played Shape-Shifting Detective. And although I could see, oh, well, these are the, you know, the characters of Poe and Monroe before they were kind of like fully fleshed out and everything. And, you know, here's some crossover DNA and here's some more information about August, this town where they are. Like, it definitely set a mood. And, you know, like, I can see where it would benefit from playing Shape-Shifting Detective first, but I don't think it's strictly necessary to enjoy it. So
if you came out liking both, having played it in the order that you did, that makes sense to me. So I wouldn't feel bad doing it the same way. The Shape-Shifting Detective has been on my plate for a while, because I loved Contradiction. I love Dr. Decker. Like, they're both really good. And I would like to see more.
Yeah. And in Poe and Monroe, if you have not played Dr. Decker, you need to, at the very least, like, look at something about Decker, just like watch a little bit of a Let's Play or something, like maybe Cole's suggestion, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, do that. And just become familiar with it before you play Poe and Monroe. If you're one of the various listeners who's like, I still need to play Decker, because that I've heard a lot of that. Because they all bought it when I you know, both of us were talking about it previously, and then, you know, it's still on their backlog too. Play it, dang it, play it.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. You don't have to play Decker all the way through to appreciate Poe and Monroe. You don't have to play Shape-Shifting Detective to appreciate that one. But Poe and Monroe is probably my favorite, and I want more of that.
One of the screenshots on the Steam page for Dark Knights is straight up just the therapy couch from Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker. So
yes,
yeah,
it makes an appearance, that therapy couch.
Yes. Looks comfy, nice high back.
Yeah, I like the color. It's very vibrant, very Cthuloid.
Nice.
Any questions, or are we done with that?
You got mine in line.
No.
Yay.
It's good to see that studio still putting stuff out, and you know, not settling into a groove, or not settling into a rut. I mean, you want to get out of the rut and into the groove. Oh man.
I think it's time for Ben.
Yeah, it is.
All right. I'm going to blow through a bunch and then talk about one in particular.
Okay.
Hades, still good. I want to beat it. I'm ready to beat it now. I've gotten to the fourth of, I think, what is four stages to the game. I've unlocked most of the stuff, most of the things with the purple economy, which is like the meta economy. But there's still, I can still unlock like one or two like revives, where like when you die, you come back with half health. And I can unlock, there's this one item you can get where you can reroll the items that you're presented with that you can pick from when you get boons from the god.
Hmm.
And I haven't gotten any of those yet. But it's at the point where it's like kind of like feeling a little bit grindy. So I think I'll kind of play it like, you know, pick it up and play a few games every week. But I don't think I'll probably be playing it too heavily.
So that raises an interesting question on you know, how much of this is skill based versus just needing to level up a bit
to grind.
Like, with a high enough skill, could you theoretically get through this game, you know, with very little leveling?
Yeah, it would be pretty tough, I think. You might be able to, but it's so one of the things that you get with the meta economy is like higher chance for them to drop like rare and epic items. And so like I think that's a big contributor to being able to like get through the game quickly. But a lot of it's kind of luck based too. Like you got to get like the right combinations of drops and good items and stuff. They do a good job of like, you know, there's like three or four different economies that they have. Like some are just for the run. Some are for like updating abilities on a meta level. Some are just for like decorating the area that you're in at a meta level. But they do a good job of, you can kind of trade between these economies. There's like a store in the overworld that you're in. So like once I like, there's like keys is like another one. Once I use like all the keys that I need to unlock the additional abilities, I can trade those in for other things. So it doesn't feel like a waste ending up with those. So that's like a good game design tenet that they have.
And is it 1-to-1, or is there like, you know, a slant away from cosmetic items, or
they're all different. It's, you know, like some's like 10-to-1, one might be 1-to-5, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They're kind of all over the place. Anyway, it's good. It's still pretty. It's kind of similar feel as like Dead Cells, if people are into that sort of game, where you can like pick up and play a run, and once you kind of go further along, it runs probably like half an hour to an hour and a half, somewhere in that range. I don't know. It's good. It's a nice and polished game. Like it feels good. Good mouthfeel. Whatever.
Mouthfeel. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. I was going to move on to another game if there wasn't any questions about Hades.
There's not a question, but I have to say this thing. So once upon a time, during Jollade, Melty Goblin, Tyler, a listener, Tyler, was playing Diablo 3 and kept on saying Malthiel, Malthiel. And I didn't know what that was or who that was or whatever. And so I was like, Mouthfeel? You keep on saying Mouthfeel. It's the weirdest thing. Yeah. Like, what is this? And I happened to come across a Malthiel cosplay, which was very cool today. And I tweeted it and it just reminded me about that. And then here's Ben with his Mouthfeel.
Can you clarify what Malthiel is?
Malthiel is a character. I will drop the link for you guys so you
it's
can
a
see
it's
what
a character
Malthiel
from?
It's a character. Diablo 3.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh.
The end.
There we go.
Mouthfeel. Mouthfeel needs to hang out with Otumiel from Oblivion. You don't remember Otumiel? I'm very sad.
No, I don't.
Otumiel was this Argonian that would sneak into people's houses and rearrange their stuff to freak them out to make them think that they were burgled, but like he just put everything in the barrels and went away. And he thinks this is very funny.
I forgot about that guy.
He's pretty good.
Oh, you.
Ben, continue.
Sorry.
Another game I've been playing this week that I already talked about last week is Phasmophobia. That game, it's still a lot of fun for me. There's after you hit like level 16, it doesn't unlock anything else. Like I think that's when you unlock the professional difficulty, and that's like a multiplier on the amount of money you gain each time. And I think I'm at like level like high 20s or low 30s, somewhere around there. But I don't know. It's still a good game to play with friends. It's like it's always fun, like looking through an area and trying to figure out what the ghost is, and then also freaking the fuck out when your flashlights start blinking, and then watching your friends die and take pictures of them. All that's fun. And then sometimes dying yourself. But once you play it like more and more, you start to like pick up the patterns of like what the ghost behavior is and be able to associate that with what kind it is, even without evidence. So that's been a lot of fun, where it's like, okay, it's like only staying in this room, so it might be territorial, so it might be this ghost. This one's like really aggressive in dark areas, it might be this type of ghost. So there's like some kind of more subtle cues there that's kind of interesting to pick up on and play.
You get a Witcher sense.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. So that's been like my favorite game to play lately. I'm going to move on from that, though, because I don't have anything else to say from it. Okay. I also played Among Us again on Friday night. Side note, this won't help any of our listeners, but AOC is playing Among Us as we speak.
And you stole my story.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Let's my story.
We'll talk about, I guess we'll talk about that later then. but I played on Friday night, and this was one of the first times that I did like a drinking night of playing like Among Us with friends. So I was much more willing to just shoot randomly into the crowd to try and get impostered. Which I had a lot of fun with it. I don't know if other people enjoyed it or not, but like round one, I would just choose who was the most suspicious and then start lobbying to shoot that person. but I still, even in a drunken state, I felt like I was making some pretty good reads. Some of it was like meta clues where it's like, okay, it's been two rounds and a lot of people have died so far and this person hasn't said anything. It's probably this person because they're usually really aggressive as imposter. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting playing with people and trying to do that sort of metagaming type thing. Yeah, so I guess that's kind of where the game goes once you kind of have the other parts of it down, maybe. But that was a lot of fun. I'm probably going to try and do that again, provided I'm not too annoying while I do it. But yeah.
Was the group drinking or was it you?
Yeah, it was like 50-50.
Gotcha.
One of the most frustrating points in the night was impostered up with Perk, my friend from Portland. And we were in a room 2-on-2, imposters so
you,
to two.
You couldn't kill him.
Well, yes.
That was the most disappointing thing.
That was the most disappointing thing. But coming in second was we were in a room and it was two of us and two like crewmates. And so I kill a crewmate and he doesn't do anything. And I get voted out. And I'm like, dude. So he was not familiar with the ways of double killing. So anyway. But it was still a fun time. Good ways to hang out with friends. But I'm going to move on from that. And then the one actual new game that I have to talk about is I started playing the game Noida this week. Have you guys heard of this game?
Yeah. Okay.
I'll drop the name in chat just in case because it's weird. But it's this weird like pixelated type game. It kind of looks like a maybe 32-bit game. Where the draw of it is all the pixels are simulated. So dirt behaves like dirt, water behaves like water, poison behaves like poison, fire behaves like fire, that sort of thing.
This was the promise of Terraria, I thought.
Possibly, yeah. I'm not sure what promises Terraria laid down.
Terraria is far, far more, has always been far more tile based than this.
It's like, I always assume Terraria is like 2D Minecraft, but
yeah.
I'm thinking of a game that looks like has a similar feel. It was like in the vein of that kind of game where, and everything was like simulated in a certain way. But
this is a thing. Okay. There were like little tech demos in Flash. There were a couple of like apps for this where you would just like paint in and drop in pixels of different types that would interact with each other. This appears to be like a Metroidvania that is done entirely in this fully simulated.
Yeah.
Fully simulated kind of way, and I can only imagine the what kind of math is being done under the hood to make for this sure. work.
Yeah, and this is like another roguelike in the same vein as like Dead Cells, where you kind of go through level progression, you can buy items at certain points, that sort of thing. I think they kind of get around like the crunchy math part of it in the sense that like the fluids or the interesting mechanics are kind of like island off, so like it's kind of like a same map as like a Hollow Knight type thing where there's kind of like different points of interest that you kind of jump between. Mm-hmm. But there's kind of like islands of interesting events. So that probably limits like the amount of like dense interactions that they need to do. But it is like very open-ended and there is a lot of free association with the different abilities of things. And they even encourage that with like different items you can pick up. Like one is like, you can pick up one where any liquid you touch will immediately freeze. Mm-hmm. And so that can be a good thing because, like, poison, for example, if it hits you, it won't, like, absorb into your skin. It'll just become ice, and it's just there. One of the weirder mechanics of the game is if you press the down arrow, you just eat whatever is near you.
I eat. I relate.
And so there's a hunger mechanic and stuff, right? You have a hunger meter and stuff in the game. So there's this weird thing where it's like you kill a monster, and then you eat it so that you're full. And it's like a very very out of left field, that mechanic. But you can, it has more practical approaches. You can like drink water with it if you're like standing in water and the water level will go down, like you're actually consuming particles of it. And then there's kind of funnier aspects of it, like there's whiskey liquid is around in some of the maps and it's flammable, but you can also like drink too much of it, and then your aim is like all over the place when you're shooting. And if you drink too much of it, you start vomiting violently, and then there's vomit particles that just mix with water or float around on it. It's just like so that part's, you know, kind of weird. You can also drink so much that you explode, like in Monty Python. A fun interaction, because you have a meter to how full your belly is as you're drinking or eating.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a very unique game. It's a very unique game experience. Like, there's not a lot of other games that you can exactly compare it to, even though it has like a genre like a roguelike like that. Yeah, the moment to moment interaction is very interesting. The other piece of it is so on any given map, there's like two or three ways to progress to the next map, and I think that's something that's similar in Dead Cells. The thing that's kind of cool about it is they have like different avenues for how to do it. So, for example, on the first map, there's like a giant like lava field on the right side. And so you can try and like, you're like a wizard, so you have this like floaty fly ability, so you can like float along for a little bit, but eventually you just fall into this giant pit of magma and you die. But but you can get these special wands that are kind of scattered throughout the map. They're kind of like points of interest, and you they'll like advertise them to you as like there's like a wispy thing in the dark. You have like a field of vision in the map, like a, I guess, fog of war type thing, so you can tell like, oh, there's something special over here, but I don't know exactly how to get there. And so part of the puzzle is like figuring out like how you can maze around the map to get to that point to get the wand. But some of the wands might give you abilities, like a rain cloud, for example. And if you do that over the lava pit, then it forms like an area that you can walk across to escape the level. There's almost always an exit at the bottom, though, like a portal at the very bottom of the map. You just have to fight through a bunch of people to get there.
I mean, probably as like a failsafe in case you get yourself into a spot. Yeah.
And that's a good point, too. Yeah. That it's at the bottom. You can always go down in the game.
Yeah.
Sure.
But some of the other fun interactions is you usually start off with a wand that has some sort of combustive ability, like either TNT or like bomb or like I think it's like a fire wand, kind of magic missile wand. That's it. But all these sorts of things are like some type of explosion. So you can do fun interactions, like if you're below like where a pool is, you can explode it. All the water will fall down, and it might extinguish like a fire in your area. Or vice versa, you could do it under pull poison or something and kill enemies with it. I don't know. It's a very interesting game. I've only played it for a couple hours, so I haven't gone too deep into it. They just released the 1.0 last week, which was another reason why I picked it up.
Oh wow!
But it's a very unique experience if you're looking for something different in a game. So
Nice. Yeah. The game I was thinking of was Starbound, which I don't think it doesn't reach the same level that this game does. But it's kind of much more granular form of Minecraft.
Gotcha.
And much more set on a large universe.
Yeah. I'm curious about this. I'm curious to see now that it's made it into 1.0. I had been watching this for a little while. I had no idea that it actually got finished.
Yeah. And I don't know. There's in one of the advertisements for the game too. They were advertising some of the developers who worked on it, and it apparently has some association with the creator of Baba Is You, but I don't know to what degree.
Yeah. It was made by a group of indie game developers, people who worked on Crayon Physics, the Swapper, and Baba Is You is what is what it says. Yes.
And they had to make their own game engine for it, I guess, which is kind of cool.
Nothing else would do this weird ass thing that nobody should even try to do.
Yeah. But yeah, game. I find that, well, even though like Phasmophobia, for example, is the exact opposite, where it's made in Unity and it's very obviously that. It's like open up the assets store, go to town and make these environments and then game on top of that. But it's interesting. You can have either way, and both can be really fun experiences.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I got.
Noita.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what's the question that you asked the nice people?
Well, Dennis sort of technically
passed it,
although I got the idea.
it's a weird kind of combination of us.
I don't know. I can read the first half. I'll take that clean.
I'll take that clean.
It's fine. I can do it. It's fine. Okay. Cool. What is a glitch, bug, or exploit that should never be removed from its game?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially because stuff can be patched out. I'll start off here with Devin, who says, in the original Command & Conquer, there's a well-known glitch where you can use sandbags to block off your base as the AI was unable to understand that it could shoot or drive over the barrier. They could shoot over the sandbags if your units or buildings were close enough, but if you built the wall out further, you could effectively shut down the enemy entirely. You could even build out across the map and put a sandbag, plug in the entrance of their base. This was fixed in Command & Conquer Red Alert and future games, but it became such a staple in the original that when Command & Conquer Remastered came out earlier this year, they kept the AI the same, including the sandbag glitch, because it was really the defining of the original missions. Plus, sandbag mazes were fun to force the enemy units to wander through.
You're playing this against an army of Anakin Skywalkers.
It gets everywhere.
I was going to say, this is the precursor to all those third-person shooters with waist-high walls that are impassable.
Okay, it's Scotty. Good. Okay. Sorry. I don't mean to interrupt with that. But yeah, Command & Conquer.
You gotta defend yourself. Like David is always being attacked by ninjas while recording. You're now always being attacked
by cats. That's why he's always bobbing and weaving. let's see here, Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, a really great quote-unquote last-minute fix in Phantasy Star 3. There's an item called the Escape Pipe, that lets you leave dungeons when you use it. At the start of the game, it's possible to sell stuff to buy one. An event happens just a few minutes into the game where you get thrown into jail. If you don't do what you're meant to and use the escape pipe instead to break out and then go see the king like you're supposed to do, he says, you used your escape pipe. Normally a smart move, but now I'm afraid the game can't be continued. Please press the reset button and try again. Ooh. A playtester found this late in development, and they either didn't want to or couldn't have fixed the issues, so they whipped up this message to fix it. Even the re-releases still have this quote-unquote bug.
This is a precursor to Far Cry 4.
Yeah.
Just follow the directions or not, or, you know, any of that. That's good. Let's see. Dennis, what does Tyler say?
Tyler says, wave dashing in Super Smash Bros. Melee. If you all or any listeners don't know what it is, it's when you air dodge diagonally into the ground, which makes you slide along the ground. While you're sliding, you can do any move that normally requires you to be standing still, which allows you to get really creative with your combos. I understand why they removed it from future Smash Bros. Games, but to me, it's a representation of how deep and mechanically complex Melee could get for being an originally intended as a party game. And it's cool how this one physics bugs allowed competitive players to pull off some wild plays. He also adds, I typed all this out gushing about the physics bug, but I'm actually very bad at using it. I just think it's neat.
It's very technical.
it is kind of a cool concept, and certainly, like, in a fighting game especially, people will find any competitive edge they can.
Mm-hmm. Ben, as somebody who knows Smash Brothers, did they ban wave dashing in competitive Melee play?
I don't believe so. No, because okay. I was gonna say, like, the first PAX tournament I went way back when I was living in Vegas, like, I would saw people like doing this or whatever. I was like, oh wow, it's crazy, and they were just like so fluidly doing this. And then the next time I played Smash, I was like, all right, let me try this now. It's like, oh, I can't even do it once, and like, this is the only thing that they do when they play this game.
That's me with literally anything in a fighting game.
Yeah, yeah. No, they make it look easy. I make it look hard. I make this look good, is what Will Smith says in Men in Black.
Solid reference.
Yeah. Jala, what does Adam say?
Adam says, I like the duplicating item glitch in Final Fantasy VII. Using W item, you can duplicate items that you can use in battle. After using one item, then keep hitting confirm, then cancel each time, duplicating the item used. Many years later, I learned the glitch can be used to duplicate items from morphed enemies too, to get things like magic and power source, which allow to max stats and break the game.
Yep. And then Square put in the break game button on their own when they remade it. So
did they? That's awesome.
Well, I mean, just set all stats to 9, you know, to maximum. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's a break game.
Yeah. Just a way to see the story without getting the, game. That's unfair. A way to see the story without dealing with the battles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dealing with them in an incredibly efficient way.
Yes.
Right. Which leads into the next one here.
It does. So Tom writes, Vampyr used to just give you experience. If you held down the P key on PC. I love that because, well, I was just terrible at the combat. I could completely ruin the themes of the game by having my cake and drinking its blood too. That's very good. The sheer absurdity of infinite XP on a game from launch day was hilarious. Characters were talking about the main character's power, and well, I guess they weren't wrong.
You know, I literally just reinstalled Vampyr because I was talking to Dave about it, and I'm like, you know, I haven't gone back and tried to finish that because I stopped at that difficulty spike, and I really just need to go eat some people and then just get back to it. Yeah. But you know, like, they up the level of the difficulty just out of nowhere, and I'm like,
In Vampyr, it's a difficulty steak.
I was just going to say, this is an excellent. No. It won't be strong enough for this one. This is an excellent potty training technique. You give experience to hold pee.
Boo! Jabba, you're the only one left. Good standing.
Oh, geez. Let's see here, Ben. What does Marisan say?
Marisan says the backwards long jump. Prize in Super Mario 3D All-Stars.
What did they cut that out of?
You can do it. I don't know if this is what he's talking about. I know in the 64 version, you can use the backwards long jump to go up the stairs to complete the game early.
Oh, right.
Oh, you know what? They ported a different version than the one we got, I think. And that cut it out. The progress skip. Yeah.
It's kind of like a mixed bag. Like, you're happy about, or you're sad about the part that you have to play the game now.
It's just people really like a game as charmingly broken as that's Mario fair. 64 no,
this,
is.
Yeah, this is like God and having people love him. You know, if it makes it meaningful that you're playing it because you have the option not to.
Yes. Let's see here, Dennis. What does David say?
David says, paintbrushes in Oblivion not being affected by the game's physics engine, but having enough collision to stand on. Making paintbrush staircases probably wasn't the best way to get anywhere, but it sure was funny. That's fantastic. I did not know that was the case.
It's pretty nuts.
I see, if I heard about that in Oblivion without being told it was a glitch, I would assume there was probably 60 pages of lore on why it was the case.
You know, there probably this was in what, Oblivion? In Skyrim, there was probably like in one of the in-game books, like an offhanded mention about the about the traveler in Cyrodiil who, you know, had a special ability with, or somebody who made a trickster wizard who made, you know, special paintbrushes that could do that. Like, that's the kind of stuff that they do. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. Jello, what does Alex say?
Alex says, Red Dead Redemption's glitch where animals would load in human models. Both Donkey Lady and Birdman are a part of me.
Oh no.
YouTube's.
Donkey Lady shouldn't be a part of anything, let alone God's green earth. Birdman sounds very funny to me, though. Just flying through the sky on a bird skeleton.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. This is not my answer for this, but the glitch in the PS3 version of Red Dead Redemption Undead Nightmare, where just occasionally enemies would load in with no heads and they would be invincible. It made the game unwinnable. I had to stop streaming it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And OMG Moose actually steals mine. Shit. Anyway. OMG Moose says skiing in Starseed's tribes. Basically, during the beta, players found that if you spammed the jump key when going down a hill, the physics would keep pushing you down the hill, increasing your speed. In a game with jetpacks, this meant you could build up a ton of speed and then keep it while flying through the air, especially if you routed your way through the hills on the map. Because of this, while there were vehicles in the game, since the maps and player counts were huge, think Battlefield 1942, but in 1998, 4 years prior to Battlefield 1942, people rarely used them since skiing was faster. Rather than patch it out, it became a defining feature for the game and all of its sequels. Yeah, I was going to say this too. It's a really satisfying technique. Like, once you get a feel for it, and it's not very difficult to get a feel for it. Yeah. Tribes rules. I wish that was still a thing you could play. But it's not. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been for a while.
Yeah, it's so funny that... disappeared from the public consciousness. Like, there have to be reboots and stuff like that, right?
They attempted one, I think, in the Xbox 360 days, but I think that the studio closed and like the rights holders, you know, it got caught in legal hell.
Sure.
Yeah. Huh. And let's see here, Ben, round us out with Rookie.
Rookie says Skyrim's buckethead bug is useful, hilarious, and hasn't been fixed in any of the 7 times they've re-released the game so far. If you put a bucket on the shopkeeper's head, they can't see you, so you can proceed to steal everything they own, pick up your crime bucket, and walk away in slow motion like a boss.
That's pretty awesome.
One, I love crime bucket. Two, strong Air Bud energy. if you don't see it, it's not illegal. Mm-hmm. And putting a bucket on somebody's head is not a crime, ergo. Mm-hmm. Oh geez. So OMG Moose took mine, the one that I prepared and came in with, so I will instead go to you, Ben.
I'll say Fallout 4, in the early release of it, you could build to almost infinite heights with your base, and they patched that out of the game, and that was disappointing.
I forgot about that.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, my thought is from like Ocarina of Time, just all the ways that speedrunners have used like item glitches and stuff like that to just eviscerate the game speed wise. Mm-hmm. I'd just be very disappointed if they ever went and polished that out.
I mean, I don't know about the majority of like the really, really bad skipping, you know, sequence break ones that you could do. But when they ported it over to the 3DS, they tried to keep as many of the weird glitches as they could. Mm-hmm. So yeah
it's I mean, for that community too, it's just like such a I know, mm-hmm. a lot of people would be very angry if that stuff got taken out.
Yes. Yeah. And Jala, round us out.
Well, I was actually originally with my version of the question going to be like, what's the worst one? Because I was bitter about Stories Untold and from the beginning. So I was sitting there and I'm like, I don't know if I got a best. But I think if I have to scrounge my brain for something, like during Guild Wars 2 beta, they had it where like if you sat down on any kind of a slope whatsoever, your character would be floating in midair. And just like laying down, but or sitting down or whatever, but like in the air, 4 feet off the ground or whatever. But also, my character, who was an elementalist and wore a skirt, the skirt would flip up every time I sat down. Ooh. And so, like, I'd just be like in panties. it was very funny to me. This wasn't like, oh, gross. It was like, it was hilarious because then, of course, like all the people in my guild were like trying to position themselves in such a way to make it look like, you know, Terra bad that I was sitting there in panties. And anyway, so that was like stupid crap you do at 3 a.m. when you're still playing a beta weekend.
Trying to maximize your time with it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the most productive thing I could have possibly been doing at that time. So what's the sleep business? anyway, yeah, like otherwise I am just bitter about the things that have made me like whenever they end game you out. Like I was doing the tutorial and I fell through the geometry and I had to restart that. But worse than that was when I was doing Stories Untold and it froze and I had to redo it from the beginning again, and because it doesn't save. And I'm like, great. That's cool.
Yeah, no, do not ever take progress away.
No.
Never.
Those are not fun.
No.
I expect that, like, honestly, if it was a worst bug ever, it would be like, this is unwinnable. This is unprogressible. This one is, you know, like, it would be more of that. So, the best bug is a better question. So, so Dennis, it is a good thing that you did.
All different flavors.
Cool. Well, thank you everybody for participating. If you would like to get in on these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, like the page, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you to Ujala and you, Dennis, for tag team in this one.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us that is exciting to us. What is going on with this real life horror game?
So there's a real life horror game afoot this month, and the brief about it is like this: come up with a concept more terrifying and warped than anything 2020 has to offer. And that is a high bar, folks. So I am skeptical, but they hired the guy who plays Ramsay Bolton in the Game of Thrones HBO series. He is playing the lead role in Screamfest 4, The Kraken's Revenge, in this real-life horror video game in which players are able to remotely issue commands to his character and watch him respond through a live link.
Oh.
This game is...
Wait, what? Great.
Yeah. Yeah, this game is created by game director John Zerhellen of Grand Theft Auto 4, Manhunt 1 and 2, and Red Dead Redemption.
That's weirdly similar to the actual concept for Manhunt.
Yes, it is. It is. Also, people will be able to play this from Wednesday, October 28th to Friday, October 30th, with 10-minute slots running from 5 p.m. each evening. This is from the UK, so 5 p.m. UK time. Tickets are available on the Beast's website for £10 a slot. And the website, just a warning if you actually go look at it, guys, it has an automatic audio story that plays, and it's super dramatic and very worth listening to, but it automatically plays the moment you open the website. So just like, don't do that right now unless you want to have your ears blasted by the Kraken Rum people.
Do not.
So anyway, that's a thing, and it sounds weird and fun, and it is very much like the Manhunt premise. So I don't know. I had to talk about it.
What is the chances that they are planning for this to go off the rails? Like, you know, something crazy is going to happen where it's like, oh, well, I got the order to kill him, and I didn't know I was actually going to kill him. And then it's
Yeah, I know. Like, I'm interested to see what, like, the post is going to be like, you know, when post experience reports and all of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. Nice. Yeah, we'll see if anybody dies. We'll see what the body count on this bad boy is.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see here. Earlier we were talking about Thanksgiving plans. I've got a short one, and this is more just generally me being happy about one more chain stopping a bad practice, which is that GameStop, international game retailer, is not going to be requiring their employees to work on Thanksgiving this year.
Good.
Some people need to work on Thanksgiving, you know, just can't have everybody not working. People who operate drawbridges probably need to be there and make sure it doesn't, you know, the wind doesn't go and blow them into the up position. You know, make the world go round. You know,
look, all the tugboat people are home, so why do the drawbridge people need to be out? It's pointless.
But yeah, for a very long time, GameStop, in addition to a bunch of other retailers, had a very bad practice of just starting Black Friday earlier and earlier and earlier, cutting into the American Thanksgiving holiday. And while not everybody celebrates, there are probably people who would be really into getting like holiday pay for doing it. Generally, you do not have a lot of control over your shifts. So if you had a bad manager who didn't care if you wanted to or needed to spend time with your family, they might make you work. And they're not going to be doing that now. They are phasing that out in favor of just doing more pre Black Friday deals and stuff like that, which is a good way to handle it, I think. So hurrah, you know, retailers, if they do not need to be open, you know, fuck it. Don't open on Black Friday either. Don't run deals.
It's going to be a dry run for them being closed every day when they shut down.
Yeah, it's kind of like how sleep is rehearsing for being dead. yeah, so I'm very happy to see this. I don't know that I know anybody who works for the chain still. I think most of my old coworkers have filtered out over time, but solidarity.
It's like everybody used to play Magic 20 years ago. It feels like everyone, you know, used to work at a GameStop 20 years ago. I don't know who's, you know, there now.
Who's still in the game. Yeah. But solidarity.
No shade at you, Ben, on the Magic front.
Oh, it's okay. I already got plenty of shame on that front. You can't shame me beyond that.
It is really funny though, as I've done playtesting for Deck of Wonders and everything, like I'll always ask, like, do you play Hearthstone or Magic or anything like that? And the universal response is, oh, I played Magic like 20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it was super popular in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. Or in the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah.
Nobody ever like stops playing Magic. It's everyone hasn't played like there. Everyone's is about to relapse into playing Magic.
Again. Yes.
Dennis, what's going on with Pac-Man?
Yeah. So I'll do Pac-Man quick and then we'll get to that AOC thing. So Pac-Man is doing a battle royale because everyone is doing a battle royale. First Tetris, then Mario. Now apparently Pac-Man's getting the treatment. And so, you know, it's, whatever, 64 games of Pac-Man going on at once. You got to be the first to clear all your dots. There's new power-ups and everything that play into the Battle Royale mode, as well as a viewer participation kind of stuff where you can vote on what items get added and all that. I'm very much for Battle Royale getting away from guns to get to last person standing. Like anything that breaks that format, I am here for. So overall, I am positive on this. I would love to see innovation on that front that takes all the things that make a battle royale game technically feasible and does it just in a little bit of a different way than a straight up race to the last person standing. So I don't think this is quite that, but it is still good to see battle royale style games that are out of the first or third person shooter genre.
Yeah. Looks cool. Is it going to be exclusive to Google Stadia?
You know, I don't know that they are the ones promoting it, but Stadia is not nearly successful enough to wall off something like this.
Right. It'd be a good way Google's
behind it. So
yeah. Yeah. Big old shrug. Move us on to the AOC one though.
Yeah. So AOC, the Congresswoman is, getting out the vote tonight by voting people out on Among Us. And she, and then I believe it's another Congresswoman, Ilhan Omar. Yep. Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying that right. And then several popular streamers are all playing Among Us together, tonight. And as we're recording actually, but it's kind of funny as I think about a game about the importance of voting, my very first, game by not realizing there was there's an option to intentionally choose not to vote. Oh, I thought you had to vote for someone. So I wound up, you know, spacing someone because I was the only one.
Oh no. I've already spammed vote out orange several times in chat.
So it is kind of a really great game for the importance of understanding and using your vote. So yeah, that's going on now. I think it peaked up around like 450,000. Yes, excuse me.
Yeah.
450,000 viewers. I might have seen it as high as 500,000 at one point, but I haven't been paying attention that close.
That's huge.
It is a lot of people out to watch this. Hopefully as many people getting motivated to go vote. And the times that I've dropped in and looked over at the chat, it's been surprisingly not terrible.
That has to be the result of just Herculean efforts on the part of campaign staff or volunteers who are going in.
I have to
imagine. The chat's going by so fast, it doesn't matter what you type.
Right, like, right.
You're only gonna see it for a microsecond, so
yeah.
But yeah, whoever is leading that effort on the back end is doing a hell of a job. So well done, because I'm sure you listen. And yeah, the only thing is like it's nice to see a politician in this context, like just having fun and being off. I don't have the sound on. I don't know if she's campaigning or doing whatever, but it's just good to see a politician being a person.
Yeah,
yeah, transparency. It's nice.
It's it's cool that we have Congress people who can do this credibly. Like, I would believe that AOC, you know, and Ilhan Omar would like mess around and have fun with this.
I mean, she played WoW back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. And like when H Bomber Guy did that huge stream for a trans youth organization in the UK couple years back, streaming all like trying to complete Donkey Kong 64, like AOC hopped on the chat while he was playing Donkey Kong 64 and like talked about trans protection legislation here in America and stuff, and like drew a shitload of attention to that gigantic charity stream that was being done. Yeah, so like she's been dipping her toe into this for a good long while. I'd be curious to see like highlights of this. I saw somebody tweet, yeah, I guarantee like,
it'll be him.
Every politician should be forced to play Among Us in public so we know what they look like when they're lying.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, to what Ben said, she managed to kill, and then I saw her get blatantly caught on one of the things I dropped in on. So I don't know if that was the same one or a different one, but I do feel somewhat better that a politician is not overtly good at murdering people and getting away with it.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed.
She's only been streaming for like 2 hours, but she's already like gotten pretty competent at the game. So
I'm curious about how Ilhan is doing.
Yeah, I don't think she's streaming, but yeah.
If she's participating, I would like, yeah, that'd be just fun to look, fun to see. Cool. Ben, did you have a story?
I was going to talk about that. Also, as an update, they were paired as imposters together, both AOC and Ilhan. And Ilhan was doing all the caring as far as producing bodies. AOC was not
killing people. Nice.
Yeah. That's a good strat.
I'm trying not to think about like the shitty culture war part of this. Like, but also in my head, I'm trying to just picture what the ghouls will try to like say to, you know, make this into like a bad thing that they did this, you know?
Yeah.
But like,
don't even worry about
it. Not think about that.
For one night. This is a cool thing that they're doing. It's a good idea. And I would like to see them do more of it in the future, especially if it's to raise money. That'd be cool. They have a big platform and obviously they can draw an audience. So way to go, squad. Way to go, people who do not need my affirmation or praise at all.
That's always good to put more positivity out there.
True. Very good idea. Cool. Well, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel buttons.
Me too. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this level number 347. Wow. We are super grateful that you are taking the time. There are many things that you can do for this particular show: Apple podcast ratings and reviews, telling your friends, Patreon, all of that. I would like to re-up and say that if you would like to dip your toes in and try the new episode or try the new show on the network, Orb, about the Venture Brothers cartoon show that Gary and I are doing, that the first full episode is up on a public feed right now. So go to orb.show and you can grab that. And episodes come out a week early on the Patreon. It's a good time.
Was that decided on before or after they announced that they weren't continuing?
This was before, leading to people accusing us of killing the show, which I don't feel great about because I like that show an awful lot and I really respect those creators.
Just tell them you didn't kill it. You got started early on the campaign to bring it back.
Yeah. So orb.show, we appreciate you taking the time. Just it's a good time, and also it's an excuse to watch the Venture Brothers. It's a good show. Dennis, what's going on with Deck of Wonders right now?
A lot. So the pledge manager is open, which means late pledges are open. So if you didn't get a chance to pledge during the Kickstarter, you can go to deckofwondersgame.com and the first article will have a link over to the GameFound platform. And actually, I actually think it's fairly high on the list of games on GameFound, which is like a is a pledge manager. So anyway, you can find it there. You can pledge now and get everything that you would have gotten at the Kickstarter. And your pledges will count to unlock stretch goals that we didn't quite reach during the Kickstarter campaign.
Oh, very cool.
We've already crossed one, which adds an entire new villain to the game, which there were three villains in the game total. Now there's four. So that's huge in and of itself. And the next one is we're closing on fast, adds more story content. And the third one was going to be doing professional audio for the game through Foreteller, which is an app that Gloomhaven uses and other story-based games. I say it was going to be that because they leaned in and we were able to set up to commit to the audio now. And so that's just happening. Like, Deck of Wonders is going to be on Foreteller. That's just a thing. that's amazing, and they have been the best partners ever. And I got to start researching what professional voice actors I want to play the parts of all these villains.
You're talking to Cole, so
yeah, right.
I will not insert myself into this. They're actual professionals.
But yeah, so that is all incredibly exciting. And the pledge manager should stay open for a good long time, because there's a good long time before the game actually comes out. Mm-hmm. But certainly there are lots of opportunities still to make it.
That's awesome. Ooh. And congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Yeah. Is there anything else to promote? Anything I'm forgetting? Mm-mm. Okay.
Sure. Write in suggestions for our Star Wars Squadrons squad name. We got to start working on that.
Is there cross platform play on that?
There is. That's how I was playing last night.
Gotcha. Okay.
Very smooth.
Yeah. Cool. So I've been Cole Ross. You can follow my tweets at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words.
I'm Jalachan in places, except when I'm not, but you can find links to those places on my Jalachan.
I am just Ben. I have no internet presence anymore.
Smart. And stick around for some titles. Okay. Who has titles?
I've got two.
Okay.
I've got first person Taco Bell.
I also have that, but I really don't want it to be that. That's pretty gross, actually. Even for us.
In which case, the second one I think is pretty strong as well, which is Crime Bucket.
Ooh,
I also had Crime Bucket.
Crime Bucket is strong. Okay.
That's the only one.
Ben, what'd you have?
So I wrote down a bunch of random ones. I wrote down For the First Forever, something Dennis said.
Okay.
I wrote down A Good Catholic Family, Jala said. I wrote down You on It About That, which is what Dennis said. Sounded funny. And then I also wrote down First Person Taco Bell. I understand if it doesn't make the title, but I beg you to go back and hear your sentence with that context in mind.
Yep, it's really funny. I got it. I laughed. It was like, I do not want to take it away. It was very funny. It's just also it's icky. Again, even for us. I commend you for your quickness in coming out with that. So yes,
another Taco Bell reference.
Jesus Christ. I also had First Person Taco Bell. I have Out of the Rut and Into the Groove, and I have A Difficulty Steak. It's got to be Crime Bucket, right?
Crime Bucket forever.
I'd be happy with Crime Bucket. That is not like a canonical name for that technique, is it?
I've got no idea.
I didn't even know about that thing. So now it's like, ooh, the itch to go like open up Skyrim. Like I have to go re-download it and crap. That'll take 5 million years. But. Oh, yeah. Once I do, gotta go try that thing. I like a steal a thing.
God, being a thief in Skyrim is actually really fun.
It's the best.
I did a search for just Crime Bucket plus Skyrim, and it's not coming up as like a canonical name for that.
Oh, so Crime, excellent. Well, it is now.
Crime Bucket is good. Yeah.
And it also works with like the murders and all the stuff I'm talking about.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.